Bet365 sponsors our podcast and features over 300,000 sporting events on their betting app. It's got everything you'll ever need to bet on sport. The app lets you access pre-match and in-play markets and provides instant match updates. Bet365 is the world's favourite online sport betting company. The app can be downloaded from Google Play and the Apple App Store. Over 18s only. Please gamble responsibly.
And welcome to the Molyneux View podcast from The Athletic with me, Jackie Oakley, and with your Wolves correspondent for The Athletic, Tim Spears, and with a rather special guest this week. It is the Wolverhampton Wanderers under-18s coach, Steve Davis, formerly the crew manager as well. Hi, Steve.
How are you doing? You all right?
Very good to have you with us. And Tim, great to see the whites of your eyes and to see, no offence, but an even better view is the actual Molyneux view, because we are here in what they call the TV studio. It doesn't look like one, does it? It's an empty room at the moment. But actually here at the Golden Palace for a change.
The Molyneux view, I like that. This is the Molyneux view. Yeah, it's a little bit better than my living room. And the normal view from the sofa. So yeah, thanks for Wolves for having us. Lots to talk about.
Very good of them to accommodate us. And I think Wolves are going to score as many goals this afternoon as they did in their actual match on Friday evening. Steve, you watched that, didn't you? A rather disappointing 0-0 draw. What did you make of the performance?
I thought it was okay off the back of a week's break as well. I think watched a few games that where they've had the break and then they're all a little bit slow getting going. I think that happens sometimes after a break. But I thought we did enough in the game to win the game, particularly the late chances. The header at the end was, we were all up off the seats thinking that was the moment, 86th minute, I think it was something like that. So, but no, it's still a good draw against a good team and, hopefully better to come.
You a VAR fan, out of interest?
I thought you'd ask me that. Yeah, listen, I think there's a place for it, but I just think it's not getting used in the right way. I think there's a lot of things they need to discuss. I'm sure they're going to sit around a table and discuss the best use of it. I don't think it's getting used in the right way. I think it's too particular with certain things. I think it was used for things around the goal mouth, a little bit closer to the goal. I think a lot of things now are given about, you're talking about fingers and fingernails and toenails. It's ridiculous. So I think if they look at it, those sort of things, I think it'd be a good use to the game. But I think it takes a long time, obviously, as well, to make decisions. And I think they can speed it up a little bit.
The nature of that VAR offside call was particularly hard to take, wasn't it? Because when you watched it in real time, you thought, well, this isn't going to be one of those that they rule out for VAR. I mean, it just can't be. Surely it's not. It's come from a corner. Surely there's no issue. I had to watch it so many times to work out what on earth had happened. And okay, by the letter of the law, I guess you could say it was right according to that freeze frame. But I guess a lot of people are saying, well, how do you know that the freeze frame is the right place to freeze it? Bearing in mind, it's not an exact science.
It's getting a bit tiresome now. This is just a recurring theme week after week. But the big thing for me is that nobody knows what's going on. Now, I wasn't actually in the press box for this game. I was up in the stadium control room for a feature which people might have read on The Athletic today. And we didn't have replays. So I was normally in the press box. You can at least get a little bit more of an impression of what's going on. But we had no TV replays. I didn't have a clue what had happened. And that's a recurring theme. And I'm getting messages from fans saying they just felt like walking out at that point. Like, what's the point? And then you see Connor Cody speaking to Mike Dean, the captain and the referee. They don't know what's exactly gone on either. So that's what needs addressing first and foremost, because it's ruining the game as a spectacle. And as enjoyment for the game that we love. It's changing it. It's changing what we love about football. That's what Nuno's been talking about as well. And that's the biggest frustration that they need to sort. VAR's is here to stay, and it's correcting all the mistakes that we moan about. But these very, very fine margin ones are the ones that, come on, use a bit of common sense.
I feel a little bit of a pillock here because all summer when I was commentating on the Women's World Cup, was it last summer? I can't even remember. Was it? It was, thank you. I was actually there 3.5 weeks, holed up in this tiny little room, not seeing humans apart from 7 match days. And I genuinely was an advocate for VAR, bearing in mind that it was brought in to correct the howlers. I was speaking to the authorities about it. They were like, yeah, we brought it in to correct the howlers. But when you bring it in to correct the howlers, you also have to correct anything. You can't just say, oh, we're only going to correct howlers. We're going to let the little mistakes go. But you can't, because you literally have to draw a line somewhere. So they have drawn a line, but that line for some people isn't making them happy and seems to be taking away the joy. Particularly, it seems, and it's not just that we're all biased in this room, but it does seem that Wolves have really been on the end of more than most.
I agree. You know, I think you can see, you know, hear the frustration in the crowd on the match days when there's that sort of silence while the referee's checking the decision, and you sort of know it's going to go against us. It's gone against us that many times that you sort of think it's going to go against us again. And I think the longer, I spoke to Connor Cody this morning, I couldn't wait to grab him at breakfast about it, and he said to me, the longer it sort of takes for them to make the decision, you know it's going to go against you. And I think that seems to be the theme for us. We've been very unlucky this season with it. It's gone against us a lot. I understand as a fan myself, the frustration that comes with that. But, you know, I hope these things do even out. I'm not sure they do. But, you know, I think, as I said, we've talked about it. They need to get some clarity. And I think we all want clarity on how it should be used.
Connor's absolutely steaming about the whole thing, isn't he? I think he's been more vocal than probably any other player because he just wants to know what's happening. It was the same at Liverpool, wasn't it? So close to being only the second team to take any points off Liverpool this season. And you get the feeling if they got Connor Cody down at Stockley Park to get in that control room that a lot of us journalists went in at the start of the season to understand it all. But then again, it's not their fault, it's IFAB. Let's stop talking about VAR. Let's talk about Wolves and their form, because since the 3-2 victory over Man City here, if you recall, they came from 2-0 down to win that game. It's been just one win in 9 games in all competitions and only 5 goals in open play in those 9 games, plus a penalty from Jimenez. What do you put that down to, Tim?
Oh, good question. I mean, well, what I would say is in that run, they've played Liverpool twice, which isn't great. But it's a bit of a concern, the run of results. I think we were saying last week it would have been great if they'd have put on a bit of a run at this point to have a bit of a buffer between what is an increasingly tightening chasing pack. I mean, Arsenal coming into some form now. Burnley now only 3 points behind Wolves given the season that they've had. So there's a bit of a concern that the games are going to now start adding up if they progress to the Europa League, which we hope and expect that they will do. What I would say is that they're not playing badly, and that would be a concern for me if they weren't creating chances. They've started keeping clean sheets again. That's been an issue, so that's great. Willy Bolly's slotted back in exceptionally well. It's like he's never been away. They look solid. They look hard to beat. It's just the other end, and I think there's a lot of focus on Adama Traore right now. He's a very obvious target, being double-marked. So they need others to maybe step up a little bit at the moment. I think the focus has come on Jota in the last few weeks, not quite as much end products as we've been used to from him.
What's up with him? He's not his usual self that he was in the second half of last season.
No, he's not, and he loves playing centrally. That's his preferred position. That's where he's done his best work for Wolves. I know he was on the left of a three in the Championship, but That's a lower level for Diogo Jota. You'd expect him to play well anywhere in that league. So yeah, he struck up that intrinsic partnership with Jimenez last season. I just don't think he's quite as comfortable on the left. And you've got Johnny, who's obviously not left footed either. So it's not quite a natural partnership down that left hand side. So the natural focus is on Traore down the right. I think Jimenez has continued scoring pretty regularly, but equally, the burden is still on him. That wasn't necessarily rectified in January with a direct kind of backup that they were craving. So there's a couple of issues there, but like I said, they're playing well. They are not being outplayed at all, and they are hard to beat. In my opinion, the results will turn, and I can see them going on a bit of a run like they did this time last year.
What's your view on where they are, Steve?
I think, you know, at this stage, we're still in a great position, even though we have gone through a difficult patch. You know, you look at the table, and we're still up there with a fighting chance to get into the top 4 or 5. You know, not many points off Sheffield United. Tottenham are within grasp. You know, we play Tottenham soon. Brighton soon, Norwich. There's games there where we can pick up points. So, as I say, like Tim, I think we've been playing well, and the margins in games are very tight. Sometimes it doesn't go for you. You know, VAR's, you know, it's played its part. So it's not an hard luck story. It's just, I think if you're playing well, you give yourself a good chance of winning games. I think I'd be more concerned if we weren't playing well and we were going on this run. But I think the moment, you know, we look at the games, we tend to be very tight in the first half anyway. And then second half, we tend to open up and the game becomes very open. And that's where our front three, like Jota and Jimenez and Traore, you know, can open doors and unlock defences in that second half. So I do think that's the best three up front that I've seen. Arguably, Jota could play in behind those two, and they could play in various positions in that three. Play a two and one in behind, which I think they do. They move it around. Again, that's up to the manager how he plays those three, but they're our most potent three. And obviously now we've got Bolly back as well. We've got a threat from set plays. You know, he's fantastic in the air. He had a couple of chances the day, scored, which was obviously disallowed as well. So he'll give us that, along with Sayce and Doc, who always seems to get on the end of things. So, like I say, I think it's a matter of time. As long as we keep playing well, keep the form, you know, good, and things will change for us, I'm sure.
We'll come on to talk about the under-18s in just a moment, which is what you're here to talk about. But just a bit of background from you, Steve, if you wouldn't mind, on what it's like being at Compton, at the Wolves training ground. It's where all the magic happens, isn't it? It's where Nuno works his magic. And just tell us what it's like being amongst those players and how they get on and how Nuno and his team work.
It's a great environment, I have to say. I enjoy going in every day. My day starts early at 6 o'clock. I get in for around 7:45, and the first team players start to come in around 8 o'clock onwards. Connor's always one of the first, with Ryan and Big John and Doc. So they're always the first at the table. Then the others sort of trickle in after that. So, and listen, they come in, they shake your hand, they talk to you. They want to be a big part of it as well. So it makes you feel, even, you know, we're here to do the 18s, we're here to develop players, but it's all one big family. You know, they all want to get involved and find out how you're doing and how you're getting on the weekend and things like that. So that's great from that point of view. Obviously, we don't get to watch the train as much as we like because it tends to clash with our training. Quite a number of our young players go down and train with the first team squad, which is fantastic experience for them. So when they do, I try and sneak and have a look and see how they're doing, see how they put themselves against the likes of Traore and how they deal with players of that nature. So we've got young Hugo Bueno, who plays left back, up against Traore. It's a fantastic thing for him to...
Not put him off football for life, no?
Yeah, well, you know, he comes up there and he's like, you can see that he's, you know, he's sweating and he's like, he's found it really tough to keep up with him. But these are the experiences the young players want, I think. You know, there's a pathway there for them. They can see that if they're good enough, they'll get the opportunity with Nuno and the staff. And they treat them with respect. They go down. If they're not good enough, they send them back. If they do, they ask for them again. So I think that's how it should be. You know, they've got to be good enough to be part of that. And again, the same with the 23s. You know, they ask for certain people, ones they can trust, one they can rely on to make the numbers up in training. Because it is a small squad that we work with, first team-wise. But so I think from, you know, you couldn't ask for any more as an 18s player, you know, at 16, 17, that you're getting opportunities to train on a regular basis down with the first team. So
what's that dialogue like between you and the senior staff? Are you talking all the time about players and about how they're developing and this one we think has got great mentality with it? Or is it more a case of watching the games and they can see how your players are doing? How does it all work behind the scenes?
I think, well, basically in the mornings you'll have a call or a text. Rui is the one that he tends to be the point of contact. He'll contact us and say, what have you got, who's in, and you know, generally they know the players now, they've been down there enough. They'll ask for certain ones again who'll go down and show great attitude and know how we play, because obviously we all play the same way through the 18s, 23s. And so then it's about planning and making sure that they're there on time at 10:30 when they start, because if they're late, they get it. So, and if they go down there and their attitude isn't right, they're sent back, and you know, and that's how it is. It's just tough for them, but you know, the attitude behaviours have got to be they've got to be right. And you know, the good thing about young players going down is they recognise how top they are, the first team players, how professional they are. Their attitudes are always spot on. They work hard every day. And I think to see that and to be involved in that environment is fantastic for the young players.
That must be a fantastic thing for a young player, knowing that on any given day that they could be training with the first team, rather than looking at them thinking, oh, that's years away before I get to that level. That must be great. And I'd imagine it also helps in terms of recruitment. I mean, a couple of kind of deals I've spoke to people about, like Max Kilman, although I know he's a bit older, or Luke Matheson, I'd imagine that with Wolves being such a big club, yet still offering these opportunities to youngsters, that must be a big help in terms of getting players into the building.
Well, they can see that, can't they? As Luke would have spoke to his agent, I'm sure, about coming here and seeing the opportunities that they've been given already. I think we've got something like 21 players out on loan at the moment as well to various clubs, Championship, League One, League Two, for more experience. Which leaves us thinner. But then obviously now more players have been bumped up to the 23s, so the 23s have become a bit younger. The challenge is there now. Obviously they play Liverpool today, and that's going to be a hell of a challenge for them. So, but that's what we want. I mean, they want to be challenged. It'd be worse if they at any club where you can't see a pathway, you can't see a way forward, and at Wolves, you know, they are getting them opportunities very young.
Well, in terms of, you mentioned a lot of players going out on loan and being pulled up to the under-23s, does that make it different, certainly for planning, for your purposes, for matches, and in terms of consistency of players working with each other? Is that must be a bit of a challenge for you as well?
Yeah, it changes. I think we want them to be pushed up when they're ready, and I think that's happened now. That 23s is becoming younger. That's now a 17s, 18s, 19s team. And I think that obviously has a knock-on effect now with the under-18s, because a lot of the 16s, 15s, 16s, 17s are a big part of the 18s. So each team's become younger. The experience they're gaining is earlier than they would have got otherwise if there'd been a big squad of 20, 21-year-olds in the way. Now they've gone out on loan to get that experience. So we've now got to think about recruitment underneath, so that when they move up, we've got some quality to bring into the 18s. And that's how it should be. It's like a conveyor belt of talent. And I think, it does have a knock-on effect, definitely, because we've all become a bit younger and the opportunities have become greater in many respects.
What would you say are the best parts of your job, and what would you say are the worst that drive you potty?
Do you know what? I don't see it as a job. I actually feel it's a pleasure to be coaching at this club, being a fan. I get up every day. I love coming in every day. So I don't see the real good things and bad things. Even with the bad things, I think are good as a fan of the club, and somebody, you know, it's a club I've loved for 40 years now. I find it hard to dislike anything about it, really. I think the difficult thing is sometimes when you lose your best players, you know who your best players are in your group, the players you can rely on and trust, the players that have got great potential. When you lose those to the 23s, you obviously want them to do well, but then it's very hard to know then you've got to start again with another player, maybe 2 or 3 years younger, or you've got to try and get to that level again. So that's the challenge for me. That's a challenge for the staff. I have some very, very dedicated staff that worked, you know, we work 6-7 days a week trying to make these players better. It's a tough process, but I get so much pleasure out of it, knowing that you're trying to bring players into Wolves' first team, and that's a great thing that I enjoy.
You've touched on it a couple of times. You are a Wolves fan. Tell us how that came about and your background.
Through my dad. My dad was a massive Wolves fan. His mates were Wolves fans, so he went to the games before I did. And then obviously I came along, and as a sort of, I think it was about 5 or 6, the first game he took me to.
What was the first game?
Do you know what? I was trying to rack my brains. I'm trying to remember it. I have the programmes, all the programmes from them days I have in my loft. I still have those things, but not managed to find them or get to them. So I was trying to look for the first. I remember Doug playing, and you know, I saw McAllioch and all that team. So it would have been around 71, 72, that sort of era. And then, you know, I remember the semi-final loss at Villa Park against Arsenal. I was there then. My dad took me to that. I remember Steve Daly breaking his leg here. I was there at that game. So there's little things that I remember. I remember standing in the South Bank, getting moved around quite a lot. You know, my dad used to take me in there before season tickets were available to supporters. And then I used to sit on the bar behind the St John's ambulance down in the corner here where we're sat here now. So I remember that distinctly because that was the place he always used to sit me, where there wasn't quite as many fans assembled, so it was quite safe. And then just going until I really then signed for Stoke as a schoolboy at 15. And obviously then it changes a little bit because you're involved on Saturdays yourself playing for a different club. But I've always looked for results. I've always gone to the games when I've been available to go. I've played here. I dreamed of playing for Wolves, of course, when I was a kid, and almost did sign for Wolves when I signed for Barnsley. They came in just after I'd signed for Barnsley, so with Graham Turner. So I almost became a Wolves player.
Why didn't you?
I'd already signed for Barnsley, so I'd already agreed to go. So I didn't want to go against that. So that obviously that was a bit of a gutter. But you know, I've managed to play. I've managed the team here, so I've been here quite a lot. I've won here and I've lost here. So I've had some great experiences at Molineux.
My dream has always been to play for Wolves. I mean, it never happened, but I never got anywhere near. But
you hadn't just signed for Barnsley, no.
But I always wonder what it would be like to be a fan of a team and then play against them. How different an experience is that for you as a player?
It was tough, obviously, coming on. I remember playing, I was on the bench for Barnsley against Wolves in the Championship, I think it was, and I remember we were winning 1-0 and came on last 10 minutes, I think it was, just trying to stop them scoring in that period. And we ended up winning the game, and it was sort of celebrating, but almost thinking we've just beat Wolves 1-0. So it was. Listen, you're professionals, and you have to be professional. So whoever you play for, they pay your wages. You have to be professional, and you know, I like to think that was the ultimate professional in those times. Even managing crew here when we lost, I think it was 2-0. Griff scored for Wolves last minute to make it 2. We played very well that day, so I was very proud of the crew team that day, even though we lost the game. So. And again, I'm looking around thinking, you know, I've sat on these terraces and now I'm managing a club there against them and things like that. So, yeah, your emotions can be a little bit mixed up. But in the end, you pay to do a job for wherever you are, and you have to do that job in the most professional way you can. But, you know, coming here and playing here. In fact, I played here in the Youth Cup for Stoke against Wolves. And I remember John Pender being part of that Youth Cup team. And then I played with John at Burnley when I was about 25, 26. So, and then obviously we're having that conversation about playing against each other in the Youth Cup. So some really good memories, some really good things have happened to me here. No more than standing on the terraces with my dad.
Just before we come on to the tweets that we've had in for you, just want to ask you how close you came to actually managing here. Because certainly we're linked in the newspapers here, and I believe you were on the short list to replace Dean Saunders. Is that right? Tell us the backstory there.
Yeah, listen, it was came off, obviously, when I started at Crewe in 2012. We got promoted. 2011, I got the job. And we had a great season, got promoted, came from nowhere to get into the playoffs, and then won through the playoffs. And then the following season, we won the St. Johnstone's Paint Trophy and finished 13th in League One, which with the budget we had was you know, phenomenal amount of success. The team I had, the staff I had there were fantastic. And then obviously off the back of that, your stock's high and there's interest. You know, I had quite a lot of interest at the time. And then spoke to Kev, who I knew anyway. And, you know, obviously they wanted to speak to me and ended up going through the process of the interviews and finishing. There was three of us in the end. And, you know, listen, I lacked Championship experience. They were in League One at the time. Desperate to get back into the Championship, and as a fan and as a manager, that was at that time, my stock was quite high. It was something that I wanted to do and something that I would have craved and enjoyed, and would have loved the opportunity to have done it, but it didn't happen. I think Kenny got the job, and you know, Kenny did a great job, got him back into the Championship and got him promoted. So listen, you look back on a lot of things. I've had quite a few interviews over the years, but that one was special because it was Wolves and it was a good opportunity to, you know, to manage a club that you love.
So David Sutton asks, how many of the current under-18 squad does Steve think might eventually get into the first team squad?
Yeah, I think the gap is so big. I think it's really tough to sort of say at 16, 17 that this kid's going to get into the first team. You know, I think Chem Campbell's made his debut, one of the second youngest to make his debut at Villa Park. Which is no mean feat, but again, he's got so much to do still. You know, he's still just 17, finding his way, 23s, he's had a taste, still got a lot to do, along with, you know, there's Christian, there's Luke, there's other players there that could, but it's such a big gap. They've got so much to do yet, you know, in terms of the work and the improvement they have to make. So it's very difficult to say this guy's a nailed on one, because sometimes they can come from the middle of the pack. It's not always necessarily the ones you expect to get there that do. You know, Ashley Westwood's a fine example of that. A crew who was always sort of middle of the pack, came from nowhere, and then came on loan to Nantwich when I was there, and then went back into Crew's team, and then went on, and then I managed him when we got promoted, then sold him it was going to be Swans, and then he went to Villa. So, you know, and I think he was one that we never thought would do it. And I think we've got players like that at Wolves who have got huge potential but still have a long way to go. And even the ones out on loan now, you could look at Dion, you could look at Cam and those sort of players, and Benny. They've been close but not there. So at the moment, I couldn't actually say in terms of names. I think there are a number that could get there, but they've got a lot to do and a lot of hard work ahead of them.
you say the middle of the pack in terms of Ashley Westwood. Harry Kane was described as the runt of the litter when he was at Tottenham. So far back was he in terms of physical ability and lacking pace and all sorts of things. Do you use him as an example of somebody who might not be achieving great things at a younger age, but actually they've got the mentality and they've got the work ethic and they do actually have the talent if they can put the other bits and pieces together?
Yeah, I think you're spot on. I think it's not just about talent and potential. It's about attitude, behaviours, how you live, how much you want it. You know, I think a lot of players fall down on those things. They've got talent. They're here because they've got talent. We know that. But the attitude, behaviour has to be consistent, and it's not. I think in Harry Kane's case, he knew what he wanted to be. He just had to work very hard to get it. Not as probably talented as some of the Tottenham players that they had at the time. Had a lot of loans, went out on loan, got a lot of experience, and came back and then just practiced and practiced and practiced, you know, and then he's almost self-made, you know, he's almost got, he manufactured himself into being the player he is because he's worked very hard and practiced every day. And I think that's the bit that we have to take for granted a little bit. Players just think because they're here, they've signed, they just train every day, that's enough. It isn't. They need to do more. They need to train extra and evenings and every day that they can learn something, they need to do that.
Kenny Jackett told me once that he was, because he had him on loan at Millwall, and he said Harry Kane's the hardest working player he's ever worked with in his whole career, which is phenomenal. I wanted to ask you, and someone I know is a media officer at another club has asked the same point. I think it's a really good one, that sometimes I did an article on Chem Campbell recently, and I kind of wondered when staff see that, do they kind of roll their eyes and think, oh no, you know, he's, someone's in the spotlight here. And someone I know has asked specifically, would Steve welcome more coverage on his under-18s team to prepare them for being in the spotlight as a professional footballer? Or does he believe his players should be protected from coverage so that they aren't in the spotlight from an early age?
I think we do media training anyway. They do some media stuff through the player care. Obviously, there's one day a week, Friday morning normally, where they get some player care, but also we do introduce other aspects of being in the spotlight, being interviewed, because it can be quite a nervous thing if you're not, you know, used to. Obviously, the more you do it, the better you get, and the more calmer you get, and you get the right answers. But I think the training is important there, I think, and our lads do get training. So I'm happy for them to be put out there and put under that pressure, because I think you have to be put under pressure as a footballer. You're going to be put under pressure when you're out in front of 30,000 people. So being sat with somebody in a room like this and being put under pressure is a different pressure, but should be something that they're exposed to. Again, we have to be careful on what they're asked and what they can say around social media, because I think there are a lot of things that are retweeted and are said on social media that they have to avoid. And I think there are guidelines on that, and the club are very good at giving them that information as well.
Do you think the media sort of have a responsibility as well, though? I mean, I think the most famous example here in recent years was Elie Ismaël, who was said to become the first £100 million footballer. I think he was 15 or 16 at the time, and you know, we don't know where Elie's career could have gone, but obviously it hasn't gone that way, and that may have had an impact. Is there a case of hyping players up too much?
Well, that's probably why when I've been asked that question, I haven't really given you any names, because I think it's wrong to throw people out there and put them under that pressure. I think, you know, young men are under enough pressure as it is to perform and to improve and become a footballer in the modern day. So I think I'd rather just say, you know, they've got potential, and I think that's where you leave it. And then really it's up to them to realise that and work hard and get there. So, yeah, I think you can protect them, and I think we should. Sometimes we do ball these players up a little bit, and not just here but everywhere. And then they fall away because of the pressure. They get these big money moves and then you don't hear of them again. So I think it can be detrimental to their development. But I think in terms of media stuff and exposure, they need it, but in a controlled way. But as a coach, I certainly wouldn't want to throw too many names out there just because you know, they do need some protection.
Your job's such an important one, isn't it? I've hosted some conferences for the Premier League, etc., about youth football, duty of care, etc., and spoken to a lot of people in your position. And as well as trying to protect them from the public and what have you, you've also got to try and keep their feet on the ground and make them realise they might not even make it. So yes, you've got to get them focused to train single-mindedly towards becoming a professional footballer, but on the other hand, they might not make it at all anywhere in the game. So how do you find that balance as a coach and as a man manager?
It's difficult because their dream is to be a footballer. But, you know, at Wolves, we have a really good education program and lots of other things around it. So it's about, it is about balance. It's about keeping the feet on the floor. That's, again, that's how you coach. You coach to enthuse them, but also to make them realise what they, you know, to stay humble and what they are and where they've come from and things like that. So I think it's up to us to keep them on the floor and control that as much as we can. But that's a challenge in itself. You'll always get different characters. Some have got a really high confidence, some are really low in confidence. And again, it's about balancing that and finding out how we can make these players tick, but in a realistic way, and then not getting, letting them get carried away with one good game or one call up to the 23s or one training session with the first team. You can see the effect that that has on them, you know.
Is that where your man management skills come in handy, having managed at Crewe and Leighton Orient, etc., over the years?
Yeah, because I mean, at Crewe we had a very small budget, and most of the model was to bring players through the system, the academy there, and the team was very young. It was 18, 19, 20 years of age. You're trying to develop a player within the first team to get results, which is probably the most difficult thing. Whereas here, we're developing players to go into the 23s to then keep developing before they get into the first team. So there's less pressure because it isn't the model. It doesn't keep the club functioning. The club functions in other ways. So there's a different type of pressure, but I think the management skills that I've learned over the years now, since 2009 when I went into assistant manager with Good John and then Dario, it has held me in good stead because I've come across these situations with players so many times and I've seen it so many times, and I can pass that experience that I've gained onto the young players.
Question in from he calls himself Ben Donker, but he's really bless him. You see what he's done there. But he's actually at Ben Shinton. He says, how important do you think it is that our academy teams play the same system and style of play as the first team? Also, is it difficult to find young players who can play the same positions as our senior players, Cody Dock, Johnny Roll, etc.?
Good question, Ben. Ben Donker, should I say. I think it's important. I mean, I know that 16s, 18s, 23s, first team all play the same system. And when Nuno or Rui wants the player to go down there, they can slide into that system very easily, so he doesn't have to really coach or teach them the role. They already know what they're doing, hopefully, when they go down there. So I think that's where it works. And if there is an injury to the 23s, we can bring one of our 18s in to fit in any of those positions because they've played that position in the same systems. So we flit around 3-5-2, 3-4-1-2, 3-4-3. We do change around slightly. So they know every sort of system and every position that there is within that system. So we do tend to put one of our players, for instance, Chien, we try and put him like Morgan maybe. So we try and connect with what their stats are in their first team games, and we try and give the players a goal as to where they should be trying to reach. So I think it's a good thing. I don't think it's a bad thing. Obviously, when Nuno leaves and a new guy comes in, if he ever leaves in the future, that's when we obviously, are we still going to play the same system? Do we have to adapt now and things like that? So at the moment, we recruit to the system. Our recruitment is around this system. So I think it's a good thing that we all play the same way.
Tim, did you hear the Molyneux weather gods then reacted very angrily to Steve's suggestion that Nuno may one day leave this club? There was a massive howl of wind, of derision at the very suggestion.
I hope he stays for life. Yeah, I hope he doesn't go anywhere, but you never know.
Paul Mansell asks, oh, this is a tough one for you. Is the academy set up for business purposes primarily rather than to unearth first team regulars at Premier League level?
I think if you look at the models of Chelsea and that, yes, that is become a business. Their recruitment, they recruit a lot of players. We don't do that so much at Wolves because of the cost involved in recruiting a lot of high profile young players. They do that at Chelsea. Manchester City have a different, slightly different, whereas Chelsea bring them through. Man City will probably bring a few through, but buy quite a few as well. So, but what they do is they loan a lot out, Championship level, League One level, and they try and sell them on. And I think there is a business in that. It can be achieved because they've done it very successfully. Now, whether we go down that route won't be my decision. That'll be, I'm just here to coach and improve players. That'll be from above as to how they want the academy to look in the future. It's definitely an improving academy that we've got at Wolves. We still have a way to go yet to be up there with the others, but we are improving. And I think in the end, for it to be a business, there has to be a lot of investment.
It certainly seems like that investment is probably coming. And Jeff Shee's spoken quite a lot about improving the academy in many ways. And I spoke to Scott Sellers, who's kind of mentioned the Chelsea model before. What did Chelsea do well that Wolves would aspire to do? How do you catch Chelsea in simple terms? Is it just about recruitment?
That's part of it. That area down in London is a brilliant catchment area. Mainly because parents don't want to go on the M25, so they stay down in South London. So I think the catchment's really good for those London boys. And a lot of this youth team that beat us convincingly, easily in fact, are from London, are from the area. And I think they only brought two or three of those players in from outside. I think a couple from Cambridge and a Dutch boy. I think other than that, they've come through the system and they've played together from a young age. So I think we have to look at that. Obviously, we've got a lot of competition in the Midlands in terms of recruitment. So we have to try and scan the areas. We have to get the right players in the areas. If we can get them younger, I think that would be a big help. Again, the DNA of the player is important. What are we looking for? Is it going to be? Is it technical? Is it size? Is it physicality? I'm not sure. I think there's a mixture depending on positions. Certainly, you look at the Wolves team, the first team in terms of size and stature, and in each position, there's a varied amount of, you know, the two outside centre halves are big and strong and quick and mobile. So I think we've got to try and replicate, if that's what they're looking for in the first team. We've got to try and get those players in the youth teams and below. We've got to look at those athletes. I think the game now, you need to be athletic. I think the Premier League demands that. There's no, in my day when the pitches weren't very good, there was a lot of players that would lope about, and you can't do that. You can't be that sort of player anymore. I think you've got to be an athlete. And then it's about obviously getting the technical aspect of the player as well as the athleticism. It's about the coaches coaching that from a young age and getting them qualities into the player and learning the game, learning the positions. I think that's where Chelsea have got the quality through consistently. They do that low down. They've got a couple of coaches at each age group that work on those technical aspects. But again, there's a big cost to the academy coming with having two coaches at each age group and the facilities and things that come with that. So whilst I think, we're improving a lot of aspects, you know, Scott's done a good job. And Jeff loves the academy. He wants the academy to be successful. I think he wants it to be a top academy. But that's going to take time. And I think we need the time to be able to catch up with these sort of academies like Chelsea.
With the situation here, Nuno likes young players. He's brought through Morgan Gibbs-White. Is there a sense that actually there is more value put upon potentially a young player coming through if, of course, they're good enough?
I think so, yeah. I think you've hit it right at the end there. They have to be good enough. And I think that's where, you know, with Morgan, he reached a level. Obviously, the Chelsea game here where he was outstanding in the 2-1 victory elevated him on television and put a lot of pressure on him, you know. And since then, he had a few injuries. But we know he's a top player or going to be a top player. But those players are few and far between. They are hard to find. It is such a difficult world to get into the Premier League as a young player. Going back to Chelsea again, I think, you know, Tristan and people like Abrahams and people they've got opportunities. You know, Mason Mount got opportunities now to play, and I think that's the important thing. I think if they have the ability but aren't getting opportunities to develop in the first team, I think that's when they lose their way and that's when they suffer. And I think obviously Morgan's been a big part of it, so his development's continued. Hopefully in the future there'll be others that can come into the squad. Obviously, Max Kilman has slid into that very comfortably from non-league football. So he's rise to the first team here has been unbelievable. So we just want more of those if possible. I think as a supporter, you love a local lad. You like a local lad. When Taylor Perry came on here, you could see the buzz that it gives Wolverhampton people to see a kid that's born around here on the pitch. And I think, you know, previous experience has been at Crewe and having Crewe lads coming in at Barnsley. We had five Barnsley lads when we got promoted into the Premier League when I played there. So I think as a supporter, it does give you a real buzz to see young local lads getting into the first team or some that have come through the academy into the first team.
Tweet from Charles. Chaz Joinson, 97, asks, for Steve, at what age can you tell an academy prospect has the attributes to make it as a pro player? I think you've touched on that, saying it varies, doesn't it?
Yeah.
And is there anything in place to help those who are released at under 18 level? Now, this is massive, isn't it? Because so many of them certainly won't make it here.
Yeah, we have a release strategy, an exit strategy. obviously the first thing we have to do, the difficult thing, is to tell the player that not getting offered a contract. And then the next stage is to prepare some clips and a profile and all the rest of it for other clubs to have a look at. So, you know, we have links in America and things like that. If they want to do a scholarship over in the States, they can do that. There's an opportunity there. Some don't want that. Some want to try and go over here. So we use our contacts at the club to try and get the player an opportunity to go into the club and for them to have a look at them. You know, we want them all to have a career. That isn't always possible, of course, but then it's down to the player once they get in there to show what they can do and try and earn themselves a contract.
And Lee Smith asked, with the academy such a priority for the club and with the issues the club have had with the Bucks Head this season at Telford, do we think they'll build a small academy ground similar to Man City to ensure the academy teams have the best possible facilities?
Yeah, I think facilities is important in terms of the pitch, and the Bucks Head hasn't been great in terms of the pitch and the availability of the games being able to play it on there this year. So that's been a problem. I know the club is looking to address that with some sort of venue, whether it's a venue that's already in the area which they can develop, or whether it's a new site. I know there's rumblings and talks about that within the hierarchy, and something that they're looking at in the future, hopefully not too distant future, because I think we do need a stadium where we can go and watch the 23s or the 18s game can be played in, like Manchester City's fantastic stadium. The girls play there as well, so it could be a multi-use stadium which benefits all of those teams.
It's exactly what this club needs, isn't it, Tim? And it has been talked about by the hierarchy here. How close do you think that is?
I think it's probably been sped up by the issues they've had at Telford this season. I think at the moment they're looking for somewhere short term and then somewhere long term, because obviously with the issues at Telford, you know, they need, I think they're playing tonight at St George's Park, which just isn't practical. So they need somewhere in the short term and the long term. Man City would be the obvious model. They've done it very, very well. And I know that Wolves are very keen to find a permanent home, and like Steve says, whether that's developing somewhere else, you've got Aldersley, Castlecroft, there are a couple of options there, or finding somewhere specific for the youth teams and the women's team as well to play at a own purpose built venue would definitely be preferable in the near future.
Just a couple of quick ones for you, Steve, and then we need to let you get on with your day. Just standing outside looking at the Billy Wright statue like Tim and I would do as fans, no? Or you got something a bit more practical to do with your day? Go and invest in the club shop. Nice keyring, yeah, Wolfie. Yeah. My kids are off after those. We had a little venture in there earlier. And Robbie asks, how much has the loan departures of the likes of Sanderson, Giles, Watt and Ashley Seal affected both the under-23s and under-18s?
It's obviously had an effect because they were the best players in that group. So, but they're at a level of development now where they need to go and be challenged somewhere else. League football, obviously Dion's gone to Cardiff, Jarlow's at Coventry now, Elliot's at Carlisle, and Benny Ashley's gone to Accrington. So they need them experiences just to see how they cope with the first team environment and how they do. But what that does do is obviously leaves a big hole and a big gap. So that's where a lot of my better players have tried to fill it. And you know, I think the 23s... is very young and will find it very difficult in this league playing against the older teams and the more experienced teams at this in this Premier 2 Academy league. It's a tough 23s league, no tougher than Liverpool tonight, who we know have been able to beat league opposition. You know, so for a young team of, I think there's seven of the under-18s involved in that squad tonight. So you know, it's a big ask, but what a great experience as well at the same time.
A quick one here from at Wolves Molly News. Do you think the strategy of investing heavily in the under-23 squad will pay off? We've seen many highly rated players join to then be sent out to League One, Two clubs, etc., never to return and show that initial promise.
I think the hope is that when you do bring, you know, Luke Matheson in, for instance, that he's gonna get into the first team squad, and you know that you have to trust the judgment of the recruitment. It's then also down to the player. He's 17. He's still got a lot to do. We know his potential. We know what he's capable of in terms of his physicality and what he can do. He's done it against Manchester United in the cup and things like that. So he's shown that he has that. But then it's coming into this environment now and being, obviously, first of all, settling in, giving him that time, giving the opportunity to be with the first team. Let them make their judgment of him. to see what they think, how he's going to fit in. And if not, then he drops into the 23s and plays with the 23s and gets the game opportunity until there's another time he gets the opportunity with the first team. So, you know, we want them all to be good enough for the first team. Unfortunately, it isn't that easy, and some won't, some will fall away, and some will get the opportunity because they're good enough. And we hope we can get the recruitment right and get more right than wrong. I think that's the thing going forward. We have to get more right.
Before we let you go, I've got to ask about something which happened 32 years ago. So one of the great days in Wolves' modern history, the 1988 Sharpeven Trophy final, seen as a massive part of the renaissance of this club. What a day! 50,000 at Wembley. So playing for Burnley, you had quite a front row seat to that great occasion for Wolves. A, what was that like to play in? And B, Steve Ball's day was ruined by the fact he didn't score that day, despite scoring about 50 in that season. Yeah. Was that your fault? Did you mark him out of the game?
Yeah, well, I knew about his record because I think he needed two or three goals to break a record. And I remember seeing that and thinking, you ain't scoring. So I think I was, 22 when I played it in that. I was 80,000 there, by the way, Tim. 80,000.
I think it was about 50,000 Wolves and 30,000 Burnley. Something. It was the biggest ever attendance for that game.
Yeah. That was a fantastic day. I remember it well. All my family were there, and I knew
booing you.
Yeah, they were. Yeah. So it was a big game for me. Obviously, being at Burnley, playing against Wolves, fantastic day. Big crowd. Knew about Bully's thing and just thought, I've got to follow him about. I remember kicking him after 20 minutes, getting a yellow card early in the final. So then I had to tread water a little bit, and I was a bit cautious as to not to do it again. But I follow him around everywhere. If you look at all the clips of when he's gets opportunities, you'll find me next to him somewhere. So I knew that I had to do a job on him, and I managed to do that day. Now, I did have days where I didn't quite get that right, but in that final, he didn't score. And I'm proud to say that some of that was down to me, not all of it, because the team performed quite well on the day, but just not enough to win that final. But I see Bully now. I've not spoke to him yet, but I do see him on match days. But I'd like to go over and you're still in my pocket, Bully, yeah, from that game. But then he'll probably fire back at me. Do you remember when I scored against you at so-and-so? So listen, he's had his days and I've had my days, but that was a great, I remember that well, because that was a season after Burnley nearly went out of the league that I joined Burnley. And that was a great sort of step after nearly going out of the league to reaching that final. That was almost the turning point of Burnley getting back onto better things.
Tim, you just nicked Tony Layton's question. He was going to ask the same one. But thank you so much. It's been an absolute pleasure having you in here. Really appreciate you giving us your time and your insight on the under-18s. And good luck trying to groom those lads for the big time, wherever that may be, hopefully here. Cheers, Steve.
Thank you. Thanks very much. Thanks for having me.
Tim, it's fantastic to hear from Steve Davis there, particularly after that really heavy defeat away to Chelsea in the FA Youth Cup. A lot of coaches would have said, actually, I don't fancy it anymore, thanks.
Yeah, good point. FA Youth Cup is the flagship competition for that age group, and Wolves took an absolute wallop in 7-0. I watched the game. Curiously enough, they could have gone 1-0 up and the game would have been very, very different. But I don't know if anyone saw it. Theo Kulbianu, not their usual penalty taker, took the ball off Christian Marquez, who some people will have heard of as being a, you know, real highly rated prospect. Took the ball off him to take the penalty, 0-0, about half an hour in, and then decided to do a Panenka penalty, which the keeper duly stood and caught. And 2 minutes later, Chelsea scored, and then I think they were 4-0 up by half time. I mean, I laugh, but it's not funny. And I'm sure that will have had a massive impact on the kind of the mentality of the Wolves lads at the time. So fair play to him for coming on. And, you know, Wolves got a lot of stick on Twitter for that result because everyone just sees the 7-0. But really, as Steve has just told us, it's okay, that's very disappointing, but that's not necessarily what it's about for him. It's not necessarily about results, and that does not impact greatly on how good a job that he's doing or the players are doing. There's so much more to it than that in terms of, as we've said, under-23s going out on loan means that the under-18s are then bumped up either to the first team or the 23s, and Steve's team has got to change week in, week out. So there's so much more to it. And from what I gather, everyone's doing a very good job in that setup, and they're very happy with how things are going. And there's much more to come in terms of investment. So that's definitely one to keep an eye on in the next few years as to how the academy develops.
So that's the under 18. Steve's going to be back here on Thursday night. You and I are going to be back here on Thursday night. I'm very, very much looking forward to that. Espanyol, they are bottom of La Liga. How much do we read into that? And how much do Wolves fans hope that the bloke who can't stop scoring isn't fit to start?
Yeah, Raúl de Tomás, we mentioned him on last week's podcast. He scored 6-6, but he missed their impressive 2-2 draw away at Sevilla at the weekend with injury. Now, I don't know whether he's going to be fit for Thursday, but you'd hope, fingers crossed, that he's not, if he's the danger man, which he certainly looks to be. I mean, their form's picked up this year, this calendar year. They've drawn with Barcelona. They've beaten Villarreal. They've beaten Mallorca. They've drawn with Bilbao. They've drawn with Sevilla. They're still bottom of the table, but they're within reach now of moving out of the relegation zone with a couple of results. So not to be underestimated is the key point. But equally, Wolves should be winning this. They're the favourites for the tie. And they'll be happy to be back on the European stage for a big night at Molineux. There are obviously danger men. Wu Lei is who's been called the Chinese Messi before, and I think he's the second highest goal scorer in Chinese Super League history. He did very well over there, earned his big move to Espanyol. I think he scored 7 goals this season. He came in for Raúl de Tomás at the weekend, so he's definitely one to keep an eye on. And it's an important game because Wolves have been short goals recently, as we know, and they've got to go to Barcelona with a lead, preferably a handsome one. So they've got to rediscover their scoring touch. Believe it or not, the last time Wolves played in Europe was against Besiktas at home in December. That was the last time, Jackie, that Wolves scored first in a football match. It's been 12 games since then. Who would have thought it on that night when they demolished, albeit Besiktas' reserves, 4-0, that would be the last time they scored first in a match, and also the last time that Jota scored. He scored his unbelievable quick-fire hat-trick that night. But since then, nothing from Jota, and Wolves haven't scored first in the game. It's got to sort it out.
That was when they were still playing in black and white. It was that long ago, wasn't it? It's bonkers.
It is bonkers, and it's infuriating, and it's been a key part of this bad run of form that they've been on in terms of results. As we were saying earlier, they're playing well, but they're going to give themselves a much better chance of winning if they're scoring first. That's just logic. So got to rectify that in the next two games, Espanyol and Norwich, two big games. They'll be confident in winning both, but they've got to rectify these problems.
They will want to score first, obviously. They won't want to concede, bearing in mind that away goals will bear extra significance after extra time.
Yeah, this is it. Knockout stage, European football. Wolves have played 6 knockout games already this season in terms of the qualifiers. Torino was a big test on that front. Difficult place to go. They overcame Torino's tight couple of legs, but they played very well. So they've done that. But yeah, away goals now count. VAR's coming back in as well for
yes.
this game.
Come on.
Oh, God. Oh, I really enjoyed those group games earlier in the year, knowing that if a goal went in, it was a goal no matter what. I dread to think.
There's a press conference, of course, before the match, so that's on Wednesday this week. I'm guessing we won't learn a great deal about Adama Traore and Jose Mourinho, Joao, as we must call him, Joao Moutinho, having not started in the last games. We won't know really until an hour before kickoff whether or not they're fit to start. What's your hunch?
I think they'll play. I think they could have played on Friday, but Nuno's got one eye, I think, tellingly, on this game, and it'll be very interesting to see in the coming weeks and on Sunday against Norwich, is he going to rotate his squad? We saw at the start of the season when Wolves were struggling, I thought he was rotating too much. He was making 5-6 changes between the qualifiers and the Premier League at the start of the season. It wasn't working. Then he went to more of a settled team and they started performing well in Europe. I think they won 4 on the bounce in Europe in the group stage and started doing well in the league. Settled team works much better for Wolves under Nuno, in my opinion, and Traore and Moutinho will be back in the team, I'm sure.
We're really grateful for all the feedback we get on this podcast, aren't we? We really do value it and read and listen and take everything into consideration. So thank you for that. And particularly good feedback from David Instone's insight on his time as Express and Star's Wolves correspondent last week, mostly under the Graeme Turner era. He was very honest about his time, really interesting to listen to. We thought it would also be great to hear about a couple of correspondents who dealt with Mick McCarthy, a huge figure at this football club in the past few years, in the Championship, in the Premier League. And Mark Douglas, who's now at the Chronicle in Newcastle, and Tim Nash also had to deal with Mick, had the pleasure of dealing with Mick. Let's hear from them now, starting with Mark Douglas.
It wasn't particularly easy, I don't think, at the start. I was pretty inexperienced. My first away trip to Plymouth, I actually let the company car run out of petrol and had to have the AA man come out. And then I think at my first press conference, Mick McCarthy had got the job in the summer, which was a good thing in some ways because it meant there was a bit of a changing of the guard. So all the old contacts went out and new people came in. And I remember Mick McCarthy's first press conference. I asked the question, you know, where do you think you can get promoted now? He just walked into a dressing room that had very few of the senior players left. He had zero budget. He had to go out and, if you remember rightly, it was the summer where the likes of Jay Bothroyd were coming in and a lot of players coming in on free transfers, young players. So he had absolutely no expectation of that season whatsoever. And he sort of turned around to me and said, well, do you think we can win promotion? And being green round the gills, I sort of said, oh, well, you know, aim for the playoffs. At least I'm thinking with this club. And he turned around, that was where he gave this famous line, the MM on my training top stands for Mick McCarthy, not Merlin the Magician. I sort of learned from that one, maybe sometimes don't try and push Mick into a corner because he could be belligerent. They lost the game fairly early on. And he said after the game in his managerial press conference that his team were running on empty. And the Express and Star ran that as a headline saying, my players were non-entities. Because one of my colleagues had been in the press conference, totally misheard it, and thought, oh, this is a great headline, we'll put it on the back page. Now, unfortunately for me, as the new guy, quite a lot of people thought it was my mistake, which it wasn't. And I think in the end, the club released a statement sort of saying the headline was wrong, and Mick didn't do that. Mick wouldn't have said that about his players. So I remember trawling up on the Monday, having sort of said, look, it wasn't me. And Mick sort of saying, well, I know it wasn't you, but you know, your paper have to apologise for it. And I don't just want the apology on page 54 next to an advert for condoms. And I sort of laughed, but, you know, he set his marker down a little bit.
I remember being hauled in by Mick McCarthy into the old press room at Compton. Just me, him and Paul Berry, the media manager, in the room. And he demanded to know, you know, in certain terms, where I'd got a story from, and demanded that I tell him. And it was a real kind of eyeballing. And anyone who's dealt with Mick would probably recall those moments. But I stood my ground and I said, I can't tell you, Mick, where I've heard it. And he said, well, if it's any of my staff, they'll never work for me again. I said, I just replied something along the lines of, well, you won't have that decision to make because you won't find out.
Now, Tim, you were in the stands when Mick McCarthy was the manager here, but you're also working on the news desk at the Express and Star at the time. Is there part of you that's sad you didn't get to deal with him, or is there part of you that's slightly relieved, or both?
I think I'd have a few stories and a few rebukes. Just a great character. I've met him a couple of times. Fantastic character. Did so many great things for this football club, which I hope never kind of go underappreciated. So, but yeah, he would have been more of a baptism of fire than Kenny Jackett, I think, Jackett, it's safe to say.
You got off very lightly there, didn't you? Mick, he really is a big character, but really, really good bloke as well, and a huge heart, and a very, very big part of success of this club in recent times, has to be said. But something else I want to talk to you about, Tim, is the FA's Heads Up campaign in conjunction with Mind Mental Health Charity. Sky did quite a lot on it yesterday, as you tweeted about. We did a fair bit on Sunday Supplement about the fact that sports journalists actually do suffer from mental health issues a lot of the time as a result of the type of work that it is. And of course, nobody wants to complain about the privilege of getting to write about your club or go and watch football matches for a living. Nobody is complaining. But the culture of it can actually breed a few issues. Have you come across that in your time?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I put a tweet out about this yesterday. I was quite surprised at some of the reactions, actually, from some people who kind of said, oh, you know, you put yourself out there, so you should expect it and you should put up with it. And honestly, I could tell you some of the tweets that have been sent to me over the years just been absolutely vile, and I would never expect anyone to have to put up with that. And it's not a case of, oh, poor me at all, because I don't moan about this. And a previous podcast I worked on, you know, made light of these issues, which kind of helped me, really, because, yeah, I don't mind saying I've struggled with it over the years, and it's taken me to kind of a few dark places, because when people are ripping apart every part of your personality, your appearance, your work, it's not nice. You know, when you work a 12-hour shift and then you get home and the first thing you see on your phone is, oh, you're a whatever. Honestly, it's horrendous. So I think it's great that people are talking about this now, and it's been a bit of a taboo issue in football as well, but I think that's changing, and I hope attitudes are changing, because it's easy to hide behind faceless accounts and think that your tweets will just go out into the Twitter sphere and it doesn't matter. But it does matter. I see every tweet that's sent to me, and I know that Wolves players, Morgan Gibbs-White's had a lot of stick, Doherty as well has, and they will see it all. And I'd like to think that people should think more about what they're saying. It shouldn't take things like what we've seen at the weekend, you know, with Caroline Flack, this awful tragedy. It shouldn't take things like that to change attitudes, but I think, sadly, that's probably going to have to be the case. So yeah, it's not nice. I would say also, in my experience, the amount of people that have come up to me in the street or on a night out or whatever, and we have a chat about Wolves, and they seem absolutely lovely, and then at the end, this happened so many times, Jackie, I can't tell you, they'll be like, can you unblock me, by the way? And honest, I don't block unless they deserve it, like really deserve it. And the amount of lovely people I've met that then asked to be unblocked, and I'm just like, well, how can you be so different in real life to your kind of Twitter persona? So yeah, hopefully, like I said, we see a bit of a change of attitudes, because it affects a lot of people in a negative way, and I'm sure you've had the same as well at some points.
Yes, even before Twitter became such a big thing, I used to get abuse every week in letter format when I used to go into the BBC and TV Centre. I remember being 6 months pregnant, and I go to my pigeonhole, and every week there's this brown envelope, and somebody had written, which what looked like an adult but using his wrong hand perhaps, sort of abuse that was quite extraordinary, about watch your back, you've got enemies, get out of football, leave it to the men, all those kind of things. It was quite scary, actually, bearing in mind the circumstances and feeling quite vulnerable and coming in first thing in the morning in the dark, 6 months pregnant, and somebody threatening to do things to you. And I've had Twitter threats as well coming around my house and what they're going to do to me in my kitchen and stuff. So yeah, it is pretty unpleasant. And that's the extreme end of it. But in terms of mental health of sports journalists, and again, it's certainly not complaining about the job, but it does involve often very long hours, very little sleep, very little glamour, all sorts of transport situations that you know, you're trying to do your job when you're sort of sitting on an airport floor in the middle of the night and what have you, and or being away from kids and family for several weeks on end in a tiny little bedsit doing 14 hours of prep for commentary a day. Again, definitely not complaining, but mental health is mental health regardless of the job you do. So the most important thing is that if people have a problem, to talk to somebody about it, and there is help out there, which is the most important thing. Well, I said we finished with a couple of tweets. Here's one. Dean Griffiths asks, is this The Athletic worth paying for, or can you send the actual report? Are you going to get his email address and just send it to him so he doesn't have to subscribe?
Oh, Dean. I mean, I'm biased, but I think it's worth it, especially with the discount code, eh, Jackie?
Wolves Pod.
Yeah, not just Wolf stuff, by the way. There's loads of stuff on there for people to read. Come on, Dean. It's worth it.
I love this one from James Barnett. Good stuff, Tim. This is in reaction to your security article that you did today about match day security at Molineux. Well worth a read. Good stuff, Tim. You're pumping out the decent articles just now. It's taken you a while, though, in fairness, Tim, hasn't it? Come on, it's been a few years.
Thanks, James. Nice to know I'm appreciated by somebody.
But that was a very, very good article. It was a long read, so it's one for a cup of tea or a beer or whatever, and sit down and get your laptop out. But you spent the Leicester game, probably quite wisely, actually, given the fact it was a 0-0 draw, up in the security, what's that called? Security room, right at the back, at the centre of the South Bank. You had a very good view of those near misses. Were you surprised by what actually goes on a match day?
Yeah, totally. I mean, I was hoping and planning to watch the match, but it didn't go very well because there was so much going on in there. It's interesting. Obviously, again, I'm biased, but people should have a read because there are 30,000 people in this beautiful stadium every week, and there's so much work that goes into keeping them safe, keeping the whole thing moving, also picking out people that are doing things that they shouldn't, and with the use of CCTV and 400 staff. I mean, it's fascinating what goes on behind the scenes. The highlight of the night, if you'll indulge me for a minute, was a Leicester fan at the end of the game had thrown a flare into the South Bank, a blue flare, pretty dangerous thing to do, and then he scarpered. And then after the game on the CCTV, the guy running the show up there, Steve Sutton, spotted him outside on one of the cameras, but they weren't sure if it was definitely him or not. And he stuck his hand up into the air, bright blue hand. They were like, yes, we've got him. So, yeah, it was really interesting to see the other side of it and someone smashing a TV because of VAR, which you completely sort of, criminal offence, but you sort of understand. Very, very interesting, and lots of stuff going on in The Athletic every single week. So keep up to date, please.
Brilliant. So we're all done here in this freezing room. I've got my fur coat on now. Faux fur, I should say. It's not real. And you've got your scarf on, which is your nod to the fact it's absolutely freezing in here and we should probably leave now. They've been very kind in giving us this room. You're probably not going to the club shop now, am I right in thinking?
No. Are you?
Do you know, I might, actually. I took my kids in just before because we were up for half term for the week. And my five-year-old bought a Wolves golf ball, thinking it was a bowling ball. He's quite little, in fairness. But they were after a Wolfie keyring and they couldn't find any in there, which is quite upsetting. And there was hardly anything for girls or women in there. That's my gripe. Very little. I think there's one pink polo shirt, which I've already got. That's about it. There's a couple of hoodies. So not great. So I might have to go and have another look because I've parked over there. But thank you, Tim. Lovely to see you in person. I'll see you on Thursday night at the Espanyol game. We'll be back next week. If you would like to subscribe to The Athletic, which frankly, I think you should, because you get to read all of Tim's articles, and some of them are quite good, and particularly that security one, then please do use the promo code WolvesPod, and you can have 40% off, and you can listen to all the podcasts ad-free as well. Thank you to Steve, to Tim, and from me, goodbye for now. We'll be with you early next Tuesday morning.